Having Answers Live. I'm Psycho, your host, and as you can tell, special show for Halloween. Happy Halloween to you. Please drive carefully. I know you're supposed to say that, but it's true. Really, drive carefully. There'll be little people out. But so that's the weird questions music. So we're going to do some weird Halloween questions today for the celebration of All Hallows Eve. So I won't be giving out the phone number. Well, I probably will be giving out the phone number, but when I do, it will be a mistake. Jimmy Akin, of course, our guest, always our guest when we do these weird questions episode. Jimmy, thanks for being with us.
Happy Halloween, Cy Kellett. How you doing?
I'm very well. Happy Halloween to you as well.
To start out, I have a question for you.
Okay.
So you said this is All Hallows Eve.
Yes.
What's a hallow?
Saint or something is hallowed if it's holy. So it's All Saints Day as well.
Correct.
I should have said that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, correct. It's the Eve. So that's the Eve part of All Saints Day. And hallow and holy come from the same root. In modern German, it's heilige, but it just means holy. And so a hallow is something that's holy, and when we apply it to a human, it's a saint. So it's the Eve of All Saints Day. That's also what we're saying every time we say the Lord's Prayer. When we say, hallowed be thy name, we're saying, may people treat your name as holy.
Yeah. And this is an ancient feast of the church, and it's followed by the Feast of All Souls. So we get we get All Hallows Eve. That's what tonight we're celebrating the Eve of the Holy Day, which is All Saints Day. And on All Saints Day, we're celebrating really the victory of the saints, I suppose is the way to say it.
Well, sure, yeah, and then we have All Souls Day for the souls who are still being purified and on their way to heaven. And since their salvation is secure, they're also saints, although they're not in heaven yet. And you lump all three of those together, and we have what used to be called Hallowtide or Hallowtime.
Ah, all right. So I guess I'm going to start you with a question here that I'm glad we're starting with, because the thing that people will immediately talk about when you talk about All Hallows Eve is, well, the claims is, you say that, but actually it comes from other roots than the Catholic Church. So I want to start out with a question from Gareth, who asks about something like that. Gareth says, in Wales, many claim Halloween came about because of the Celtic feast of Samhain.
Samhain. I know it's spelled Samhain, but it's pronounced Samhain.
Oh, all right. It freaks me out, that word, a little bit, because I think the son of Sam has something to do with that. Wasn't Samhain one, like?
Yeah.
So Samhain is what I'm supposed to say.
David Berkowitz was the son of Sam Killer a few decades ago in New York City, and he claims, and there is actually pretty good evidence to back this up, that he wasn't alone in doing those killings, that he was one of the killers, but that they were, he was part of a ritual group that worshipped a pagan god known as Samhain, although back then you couldn't look up how to pronounce things on the internet because there was no internet. And so they were mispronouncing it as Samhain based on the way it's spelled.
Ah, like me. So this question then is about the Celtic festival of Samhain. Is it true? When did All Saints begin? Does it predate Samhain? If not, are the dates coincidental? Is this a case of if the church chooses a date, it's always going to coincide with something somewhere in the world?
Well, in essence, yes. Uh-huh. Samhain is a Gaelic festival that was used in like Irish and Scottish culture and so forth. And it is dated to October 31st. There are certain key dates in the year. You have the solstices and the equinoxes, and Samhain falls kind of between the summer solstice and the winter equinox. And so it's also related to, you know, harvest time and things like that. And so it was something they did in Celtic lands. Cy Kellett, Is Rome a Celtic land?
No, it is not. It is far from the Celtic lands.
Yeah, and so this reveals the one of the problems with this. This is a kind of cultural myopia. It's like when people say, ooh, the English word Easter might be based on the name of a pagan goddess, therefore Easter is pagan. Well, okay, you know where Easter started? Jerusalem. They didn't worship. They didn't worship pre-Christian British gods in Jerusalem. I mean, England is way far away, and so what? This is an instance where people are familiar with one culture, like from the British Isles, and they're treating it as if that's universal and is going to explain something that applies to the entire Christian world. Well, no, that's not the correct explanation either for Easter or for Halloween. What happened was in the early church, they would have, you know, saint days where they'd commemorate saints, and sometimes there would be groups of martyrs that were all martyred on the same day. And so it would be common to have a commemoration of all of the martyrs who died on the same day. And eventually the church started to say, okay, well, we have these different saints, but we know they're not all of them. Not all of the saints are on our liturgical calendar. So we want to have something that commemorates all of them, and even the ones we don't know about. And so so they implemented that, and it got implemented on a few different days during the year over the course of history and in different places. But in the 700s, Pope Gregory III dedicated a chapel or oratory in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome to all of the saints. And according to various sources, it was dedicated on November 1st, and it thus got onto the Roman liturgical calendar on November 1st. Halloween was then formed as the eve anticipating that holy day. But you don't get onto the Roman liturgical calendar because some pagans up in England are doing something
right
the day before. So Halloween has nothing to do with Samhain. It's a kind of cultural myopia that leads to those claims. Really what happened is the church decided in Rome that they wanted to have a feast commemorating all of the saints on November 1st, and it just so happened that a bunch of pagan yahoos up in the British Isles were doing something the day before.
Pagan yahoos.
That's kind of where the word pagan comes from. I mean, it kind of means yahoo.
Right.
In Latin, paganus means like a rustic person, a hick. Because Christianity spread first in the cities. That's where the people are.
Gareth also included this because I gather that Gareth is Welsh himself. And so he wrote this, Jimmy. You're going to help me with my Welsh pronunciation. But he wrote, I would say Dioch. Jimmy?
Yeah. Really? Diolch. Yeah.
Diolch, Jimmy. Your show is fantastic, as we say in Wales. I don't know how I did on the second one there.
It's just fantastic. Fantastic is just an alternate spelling. But Diolch is Welsh for thank you. And so croeso, Gareth. My pleasure.
Ah, very good.
It means you're welcome.
Gareth, thank you so much for starting us off with that question. It's for Halloween. We're doing weird Halloween weird questions with Jimmy Akin. I'm sure it will be all kinds of weird questions, but perfect thing for Halloween. And the next one follows in a similar vein, but Mark asks this: how would you address the deeply Catholic origins of the holiday and how those got twisted into what we have today?
Well, we've sort of covered the origins of Halloween in terms of how we got the modern version. It's really an American creation. What happened was, so early in American history, you had a few people in America in the colonial period celebrating Halloween. They were primarily Catholics, you know, so for them it was just the eve of All Saints Day. You also had some Anglicans do that, but not up in Puritan New England, because the Puritans were like totally down on
fun.
So then in the 19th century, we had waves of Irish and Scottish immigration to the United States. And, you know, like the Irish potato famine in the 1840s was one of the drivers of that because there was no food available in Ireland for reasons we won't go into. But you had all these Irish and Scottish immigrants, and they brought various customs with them, including things like using jack-o'-lanterns on Halloween. Although the jack-o'-lanterns originally weren't pumpkins, they were turnips. So you get like a big turnip and carve it into a face and put a candle in it. And so these customs got introduced, and there were a bunch of them. And then in the 20th century, when mass media and marketing began, people realized you could make a buck off of this. And so we got one of the classic phenomena of the 20th century was the commercialization of American culture, and that's what ruined Christmas, and that's what ruined Halloween, and then the dominance of American media in the globally in the post-World War II period led that to be broadcast to everybody in the world, and that's how we got modern Halloween.
Mark, thank you very, very much for the question. More weird Halloween questions to come, but I better take the first break. We'll take that break and be right back with more of our weird questions for Halloween with Jimmy Akin.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Marcus Grody and his son John Mark talk about the journey home.
Yeah, how do I feel about passing the baton to my son? I am very excited about that.
It's weird to be stepping into my dad's role here. I'm humbled and honored, obviously, by the privilege and by his confidence in EWTN's and the audiences. In some sense, this is something I've been around all my life.
The journey continues on The Journey Home, tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, only on EWTN Radio and Television.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Celebrating Halloween, the eve of All Hallows. Tomorrow is a holy day for Catholics, where we go to Mass and remember the saints. And been doing that for centuries and centuries and centuries. So the eve of that is All Hallows Eve, where we get the word Halloween. And we're doing some weird Halloween questions. Perfect time to do weird questions with Jimmy Akin, Halloween. And this one comes from Amanda. Jimmy, what was your favorite Halloween candy when you were a child, and what was your favorite costume?
Well, so I don't remember having a particular candy that was my favorite. I remember liking candy corn. Probably one of my all-time favorite childhood candy was something called a cherry mash. And what that was it was like a ball of cherry-flavored marzipan that had been dipped in chocolate that contained nuts in the chocolate. And so you'd have this chocolate confection with nuts, and you'd bite into it, and there would be cherry marzipan in the center. And I really loved those.
We had them on the show together one
time. Yeah, you did. You found some, which was great. Thank you so much for that. But I don't remember particularly eating those on Halloween, but that would have been my favorite candy as a child. One thing I remember as a Halloween candy that I only ever saw at Halloween was, and this would have been like early 1970s, like 1971, 1972, was a kind of a drink in a little wax bottle.
Oh, I remember those.
Yeah. And so even though you could get a full-size Coke in a glass bottle,
yeah,
for Halloween, they had these little candies. They were like an inch or two tall, and they were made out of wax, and they were flat. They weren't round bottles, but they were flat imitations of bottles. And you would bite off the head of the bottle, you know, because it's just wax, and then you would suck out the liquid that was inside of it, which I remember like being blue or other colors.
Yeah.
And it was just a little sweet drink. And I remember those at Halloween. And I remember I liked biting into the wax bottles and sucking out the liquid.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you? Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. But I'll also do costumes. But go ahead.
I just didn't know if you were of the age when, remember, there was like the Halloween scare that would come every year. They would report on TV that they were going to put razors in your apples and stuff. And
I remember Halloween before those scares, which were sort of, they were around a lot in the mid-1970s, and they kind of killed some of the fun for people. And it was all based on overblown rumors. You know, that didn't really, it was not as dangerous as people were making it sound.
Yeah.
But there was kind of what was known as a moral panic at the time about it. And later there were moral panics on other things, like the Satanism moral panic in the 1990s so forth.
But my mom very helpfully tested our candy for us before we would, she was very helpful in that regard. She'd just take the first bite, make sure there's nothing bad in there, then you could have it.
Okay. Well, whatever works.
Yeah,
glad mom's on the lookout.
Yeah.
So in terms of costumes, they had, and I remember as a kid, those kind of, and I gather they still have them, those kind of store-bought low-grade costumes where like there'll be kind of a cheap costume that you made out of some kind of bizarrely slick polyester fabric that you would wear. And then they'd have like a very thin plastic mask with a rubber band that you would put over your face.
Yeah.
I at least early on, I don't really remember wearing those. I remember seeing those, but I don't remember wearing those because my mom made much better costumes than that.
Oh.
And as a little child, I was growing up in the Ozark Mountains in Arkansas, and this was before cable television existed, at least in Arkansas. And so we had only a few stations we could get. One of them was Channel 8 from Tulsa. And every Friday night, they had a horror show, a horror movie. Originally it was called Boo Theater, and it was hosted by a character named Dr. Boo, who was like a mad scientist, and he had a sidekick for comic relief, a comic relief sidekick that would accompany him in the sketches that they would use for commercial breaks as they're showing a horror movie. So they're showing these classic horror movies like Dracula and Frankenstein and stuff, but then they'd have these host segments. And Dr. Boo's sidekick was Melvin the Crummy Dummy Mummy. And so I remember one year I was like 6 or 7 and and I wanted a mummy costume. And my mom took clothing, like blue jeans, and sewed strips of torn sheets onto it to make the mummy wrappings.
Wow.
And so I could just put on these pants and a shirt and a mask and stuff, and I'm a mummy. And I think about the work that went into making that costume.
Right.
You know, I remember my mom doing it, but I mean, that was an intense bit of work to sew mummy wrappings onto clothing. I mean, she used a machine to do it, but still, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And for a few hours of payoff on Halloween.
Yeah.
And so I just really admire my mom doing that. Also, because I like the horror movies, I liked Dracula, and one year I wanted to be a Dracula and a vampire. And my mom made a black cape for me. And it wasn't just a single sheet of black fabric. It was like double folded, and you could tie it around your neck. She put ties on it and everything. And I remember wearing that cape. I didn't just wear it for Halloween. It was a fun cape. And so looking back, I would have to say those two, the mummy costume and the Dracula costume, were my favorite ones that my mom made for me.
That's very nice. Amanda, thank you very, very much. It's Weird Halloween Questions with Jimmy Akin this hour and next as we celebrate Halloween. And up next comes from Robert. And Robert asks this: if I were to dress up as a Knight Templar for Halloween, putting on the habit of a Knight of the Order, would I be in violation of papal bull Vox in Excelso and thereby excommunicated? The bull suppressed the order of the temple and specifically stated that anyone wearing the habit of the order would be subject to laete sensei, excommunication.
Okay, so first of all, I probably should note that the bull did not entirely suppress the order of the Templars. There is at least one survival of the order of Templars that is in Europe today. And I did an episode of Mysterious World on the Templars a while back, so you can go listen to that if you want, and it'll give the history of that and talk about the surviving remnant. But yeah, most of the order was suppressed. And at the time, putting on the habit of the Templars would have been very confusing. And so I can understand, and they would excommunicate people for all kinds of stuff back then. So I could understand that excommunication in the time. But there are two legal doctrines that that are relevant here. The first one is a concept called desuetude. Desuetude is when a law falls out of use and loses its force.
Uh-huh.
Because even though it may technically still be on the books, it hasn't been enforced or implemented in ages. And at some point, it just loses its force through non-use. So the bull could have fallen into desuetude at some point. But there's a second doctrine, which is even more relevant, which is that when a section of the law is integrally reordered, then all prior laws on that topic lose their force. And so that would have happened, even if Vox in Excelso would have still been in force up to 1917, and I doubt that very much, but even if it was, then the release of the 1917 Code of Canon Law integrally reordered the entirety of Catholic law with very few exceptions. And so the bull would have lost force at that point. It even more would have lost force with the release of the 1983 code, which integrally reordered the law again, causing the 1917 code to lose its force. And so today, if you're going to be excommunicated, whether laete sententiae or otherwise, the other not laete sententiae excommunication is automatic excommunication. A bishop doesn't have to issue a decree. You've just automatically excommunicated yourself. The other kind, where a bishop declares the excommunication, is known as ferendae sententiae excommunication. But in order to be excommunicated today, whether laete or not, you have to violate one of the canons in the Code of Canon Law that has excommunication attached as a penalty, or at least a possible penalty. And wearing the habit of the Knights Templar is not one of those. So if you want to go as a Templar for Halloween, be my guest.
Go ahead. I hope you find the treasure. Because it's out there somewhere, right? Knights Templar treasure. I'm pretty sure that the History Channel has done several shows on the Knights Templar treasure. Unless the aliens got it.
Quite a few shows, yes.
Yeah. Halloween weird questions with Jimmy Akin this hour. We hope you are having a happy Halloween. And I'll remind you again, if you're in the car, be careful. Come on, there's little kids out there. And Jimmy, you also are the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. What's coming up Friday on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World?
Well, we're going to be looking at an incident from 1964 that occurred in Socorro, New Mexico. There was a police officer who was chasing a speeding driver when he heard an enormous roar in the sky. And then he heard he saw a flame in the sky, and he remembered there's a dynamite shack nearby. Maybe it blew up, and maybe someone needs help. And so he abandoned, his name was Lonnie Zamora. Officer Zamora stopped chasing the speeding driver. He went to go find the dynamite shack. And when he did, he saw a UFO on the ground with occupants on the outside of the UFO. And it was a brief encounter, but it then took off and flew away, and it left traces on the ground. There were imprints where its landing gear had been on the ground.
What?
And this is New Mexico, so you've got this chaparral environment. The scrub on the ground is burning and singed from where it took off. And this is one of the Lonnie Zamora Socorro, New Mexico UFO case is considered one of the best documented UFO landing cases of all time. And so this Friday, we're going to be talking about that.
Wow. And did he say what the people look like? Like, do they look like humans or they look like little green men or?
He said that they looked like they were wearing white overalls and they either were normal height or maybe a little shorter, but they looked pretty human to him.
Ah, possibly Knights Templar who are now working for the aliens. We'll find out on Friday on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. More weird questions with Jimmy Akin for this Halloween right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What if the voice of your deepest doubts about Catholicism rose up in the form of a human being and challenged you to defend your most foundational beliefs? That's the task apologist Trent Horn took upon himself in his new book, Devil's Advocate, a dialogue with his own best objections against the faith that he professes and defends. You can stand up against your doubts, and Trent will show you how. Pick up your copy of Devil's Advocate today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity in The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back. Happy Halloween. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We got some weird questions for Jimmy, and here's a really weird one, Jimmy. This comes from Justin. Mm-hmm. Justin says, Jimmy, I've got a story that happened to me, and I'd love your thoughts on it. I went to a Benedictine Catholic liberal arts college in the Midwest. One night during the week of Halloween, I was up late at night, 1 a.m., working on a Russian history paper. I was in my dorm room, working with just my lamp on, and suddenly, my roommate was asleep behind me. He sat up on the bottom bunk. Suddenly, I heard him sit up, so I turn and I look at him, and he looks at me with a weird, distant look on his face, and he says, "You have something dead in your school." I assume I misheard him, so I just say, "What?" "You have something dead in your school," he says again. "What?" "You have something dead in your school." At this point, I reason that he's very actively sleep-talking, and I say as much. "You're talking in your sleep, man. Go back to sleep." He looks at me with an odd half-smirk, nods, and just lays back down and falls back into sleep. I think nothing else of this and go to bed after printing off my paper. I come to find out that at that same time as this took place, around 1 a.m., one of the monks at the abbey had passed. So, just coincidence, some sort of heralding? I'd love your thoughts.
Okay. So this is apparently a you know, this is an apparent reported paranormal experience. And it's difficult to investigate non-recurring paranormal experiences because you don't really have a lot of data. It's much easier if there's to investigate if something is going on a regular basis, like a house is regularly being haunted or something, because then you can gather a lot more data, you can test hypotheses and so forth. But when you just have a one-off spontaneous experience like this, it's harder to evaluate. Having said that, if I were to investigate this, and I know this is in the past, but these are my thoughts. The first thing you do is try to think of every natural explanation that you can, and then see, are they plausible or can they be eliminated? Mm-hmm. And it's only if you can eliminate the natural explanations that you would look at a paranormal one. In this case, the first thing that I would wonder is I'd like to interview the roommate and say, do you remember this experience? Because it could always be coincidence in that the roommate, you said this is Halloween week, so maybe the roommate decides to play a prank and sits up and says something spooky in the middle of the night and then lays back down when you tell him to. And then it was just a coincidence that the monk died at the same time. And if he remembers it, and if you can get him to fess up, well, then that would explain this. On the other hand, if he says he doesn't remember it, and he seems sincere, you know, and he's otherwise trustworthy and so forth, then it, you know, certainly warrants further explanation. Now, it could still be coincidence, but it is at least suggestive of something more than coincidence, because you have this unusual correlation of the sleeping roommate announcing a death in the school at the same time a death in the school has just happened. And so I wouldn't rule out, at least based on my present knowledge, I wouldn't rule out that something paranormal happened here. The question would be, what was it? Well, there is a phenomenon that is widely reported in history known as crisis apparitions. A crisis apparition occurs when a either living person or someone who has just died appears to people and communicates with, either appears to them visually or in the form of a voice or both, and makes themselves known to people, usually people that are close to them emotionally. So like lots of people will say, when my mother died or when my father died, I had a dream at that same time, or they appeared to me, or I heard their voice or something like that. And that would be a crisis apparition. So it could be that this monk had some kind of crisis apparition at the time of his death that was subconsciously picked up on by the roommate. And the roommate then incorporated that into his sleeping experience, and it came out through his sleep talking. So a crisis apparition that gets picked up on by the roommate, and he says this as part of his sleep talking, you know, because people talk in their sleep, that could be one explanation. It could be something else, too. Reportedly, you know, and this is just the claim, but it's claimed that psychic functioning occurs more easily when people are in a relaxed state, and like if they're asleep or something like that. That's why people sometimes have precognitive dreams. Now, sometimes a dream can just be coincidence, but sometimes it's claimed it'll be way too specific to be random chance. And so it could be that the roommate, there was no crisis apparition, but instead the roommate was in a relaxed state and he mentally senses the death occurring and then incorporates that into his sleep talk. And in that case, telepathy would be the explanation. Telepathy would also be involved in a crisis apparition, but it would be the roommate's telepathy in this case, as opposed to the monk projecting the fact of his death. Then it could be something else. It could be clairvoyance, where the roommate senses what's happening with the monk clairvoyantly. And all of this could be God giving the roommate a nudge or allowing a saint or angel to give the roommate a nudge that this is happening, and it comes out in his sleep talk. So I can't say that this is a paranormal or supernatural experience based on the data, but I wouldn't rule it out either. But like I said, it's difficult to evaluate one-off spontaneous events because they're non-recurrent and you can't gather a lot of data and rigorously test them as you could if they were occurring on a regular basis.
Thank you very much for the great story, Justin, and the question. I appreciate it. Jimmy, can I just ask a clarifying thing? Because you say paranormal or
supernatural.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between those two things?
Well, there's not a rigorous difference in it. This is the definition problem of what even counts as paranormal or what counts as supernatural is actually debated in parapsychology. But the way I use the terms, I would say something, I mean, at least when it comes to something like this. Now, paranormal, properly speaking, would be anything that is not normal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where it comes from. Para is Greek. It means alongside.
Yeah.
And so a paranormal experience would be something that happens alongside normal experiences, but isn't normal. Supernatural. So super is Latin for above.
Yeah.
And so a supernatural event is something that comes from above nature. And we associate that with God and angels and saints and demons, too, for that matter, because they're above human nature and what we ordinarily experience in the natural world. So what I tend to do to distinguish the paranormal and the supernatural, sometimes I'll use the terms as synonyms. In that case, I'll tend to use paranormal and include supernatural within it. But if I'm distinguishing them, I would use paranormal to refer to things like psychic functioning that are claimed to be part of human nature. There's a common claim, the common understanding of psychic abilities are that they're things that we have in us. Mm-hmm. And there have been Catholic that God built into us. There have been Catholic parapsychologists like Father Alois Feisinger, who have proposed that psychic abilities are really the remnants of the paranormal gifts that our first parents would have had before the fall, but they're weak and unreliable now because of original sin. And then presumably once we're resurrected and in glorified form, we'll have all those abilities back full force. But I would tend to use, if I'm distinguishing the paranormal and the supernatural, I would tend to use paranormal for things that are part of human nature or believed to be part of human nature. And then I would use supernatural for things that are not believed to be part of the nature of a living human. So that would be God, angels, saints, demons, that kind of stuff.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that, Jimmy. Boy, we got a whole bunch more and some just fantastic Halloween-related and other weird questions on this Halloween for Jimmy Akin. So hang on. We'll take a very quick break, and we'll be right back with more weird questions for Jimmy Akin on this Halloween.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
One of the reasons we should go to Mass is because, if you look in the Catechism, you will see the fruits of Holy Communion. And these are remarkable things that we can receive at every Mass that we attend. We encounter the risen Lord, and He shares something of His divine life and love with us.
The Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, live from the EWTN Chapel, every morning, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
That weird music. I love it because it means Jimmy's here answering weird questions for us, but also it's just really cool music. I like it a lot, and happy Halloween to you. Perfect time to do weird questions with Jimmy Akin. Jimmy, this one comes from Jason. Who's the best Dracula?
Well, I would say, now there have been a lot of people who've played Dracula, including very recently. For example, the British TV producer Stephen Moffat, who's known for doing Doctor Who and Sherlock, recently did like a three-part miniseries on Dracula, which had some very interesting aspects to it, also, you know, modern stuff. But I would say historically, the best Dracula would have to be either Bela Lugosi, who starred in the 1931 version of Dracula, as well as other films, or Christopher Lee, who began playing Dracula in the 1958 Hammer Films version of Dracula. They both have interesting qualities as Dracula. Bela Lugosi is more suave and sinister, and talks more, whereas Christopher Lee's Dracula is much more direct and animalistic, and is not the kind of upper class sophisticate that Bela Lugosi's is. What I will say is the best ever Dracula death scene is the death scene in the 1958 Christopher Lee Dracula. Really? You have Peter Cushing as Van Helsing, and in their final confrontation where Van Helsing kills Dracula, you've got Peter Cushing confronting Christopher Lee, and they're in a castle. And this is color, by the way. So they're in this dining room in a castle, and Dracula is fast and brutal, and he's going after Van Helsing. Van Helsing is desperately trying to defend himself, and he takes from the long dining table in the dining hall, he takes two candlesticks and crosses them to try to ward off Dracula. And then he runs down the dining table towards the window, which is covered by drapes, and the sun's coming up. And he leaps onto the drapes and yanks them down
with
the force of his body falling. So the sunlight shines in, spears the foot of Christopher Lee's Dracula, and it instantly turns to ash, and Dracula screams, and then the sunlight progressively kills him as he turns into ash.
That is good.
And it is the most dramatic Dracula death scene ever.
If people don't know who Christopher Lee is, they probably know him as Saruman from the Peter Jackson movies.
Yeah, or Count Dooku from Star Wars.
Oh, that's
but
right.
The less said about that, the better.
Yeah. Kind of a very famous kind of B-movie actor, and Ian McKellen, who played Gandalf, I remember in an interview said he was really impressed with what a good actor Lee was, you know, because he had a reputation of kind of doing the B-movies, but he was very impressed with what a good actor he was.
He is a very good actor. He's also a devout Catholic.
And, oh, I didn't know that.
And would talk about his faith and warn people against dabbling in demonic stuff and say you'll destroy your soul. Do not do that, even though he was a horror actor. Peter Cushing, who played Van Helsing in this movie, he was a very good actor, too. Now, he was Grand Moff Tarkin in the original Star Wars.
Right. Oh, yes, that's
And he was known for his creative use of props. He would, as part of his acting routine, you know, he'd prepare for a role and he'd go to play the part, and the crew had no idea what was going to happen, but he would just start pulling out props and doing stuff with them as he's acting. And they had no idea that he had this pre-planned routine that he was going to do to accentuate his verbal performance. He didn't want to stop with just the words. He wanted to physicalize things with objects in his environment, and he would even bring the objects himself to use. And they nicknamed him Props Cushing.
Well, I was surprised to not hear any mention of a really impressive Dracula, George Hamilton.
Who?
George... George Hamilton, Love at First Bite, 1979.
Oh, yeah, okay. No, I know the actor George Hamilton. I don't recall if I've ever seen Love at First Bite. Maybe I have.
It's a comedy, and poor Dracula gets evicted from his castle by the Romanian communists. And it has to go to New York City. And there he meets Susan St. James, which, what luck. All right, Jason, thanks for that question. This one comes from Sean. What does Jimmy feel is better, is the better TV show, The Addams Family or The Munsters, and why?
So I like both of those. They're both fun. They're both nice monster-themed situation comedies. Historically, though, I would have to say that I prefer The Addams Family. I mean, I like them both, but I prefer The Addams Family because it is not on the nose. It is more subtle. It is more complex. On the Munsters, it's very slapstick.
Yes.
Herman Munster is a Frankenstein. Lily is a vampire. Grandpa is a vampire. Eddie is a werewolf. And then you have Cousin Marilyn. So it's very on the nose. These are very recognizable, classic, Universal Studios horror monsters. And they're just played for comedy. So it's very broad, to use a kind of industry term. It's not subtle comedy. The Addams Family, though, they're subtle. I mean, they're all off in various ways. I mean, they're creepy and they're kooky, they're mysterious and spooky, but not in an easily identifiable way.
Yeah.
I mean, what is Gomez Adams?
I don't know, but don't speak French around him.
Yeah, well, he's and the same is true of Wednesday and Pugsley and all of them. I mean, Grandmama, you could say is a witch, but not, but that's not her defining trait. She's not like wearing a hat and carrying a broomstick or anything. Uncle Fester is weird,
because he's bald.
Morticia is, well, he makes light bulbs light up when he puts them in his mouth.
Oh,
and
yeah,
he wears a monk's robe.
Right.
Morticia is weird. They're all weird, but none of them are classic stereotypes.
Oh, I never thought of that.
And I appreciate that subtlety and going beyond the broad, easy form of humor to make it more subtle. I like that.
It's weird questions for Jimmy Akin for this Halloween. The great Fred Wynn, though. I mean, what a...
Oh, Fred Gwynn is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris asks this, Jimmy. This is more of a funny question than a weird question, I think. Why do all the Star Wars Force ghosts have to sit down when imparting lengthy advice to Luke?
Well, I try to take every question seriously, so it's so they don't get tired of standing while they're imparting lengthy advice.
But
that's it. That's a simple answer.
You same just reason don't other, think of a ghost as tiring out, though.
Well, same reason living people sit down when they're imparting lengthy advice.
I don't actually know the background of this one, so you'll have to tell us. Amanda asks this on behalf of her daughter. She says, my daughter Fiona wants to know if Annabelle, the doll, is really possessed by a demon. Fiona wants me to clarify that she's asking about the real doll in the occult museum, not the movie.
Okay, so Annabelle is a Raggedy Ann doll that around 1970, I think, was given to Ed and Lorraine Warren, who were a Catholic couple, but they weren't the most orthodox Catholics. Lorraine Warren, if I recall correctly, and she was a medium, and her husband Ed billed himself as a demonologist, and allegedly they participated in exorcisms and things like that. And people have asked me to do a Mysterious World episode on Ed and Lorraine Warren, and I will at some point, but the research I've done on them thus far is I'm not very impressed with them. Among other things, they got taken in by the Amityville Horror, which was a hoax.
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. The Amityville Horror was a hoax invented to make money, and they got taken in by it. So I'm not particularly impressed with their critical thinking and research skills. But they were given a doll. It was a Raggedy Ann doll by a nurse, and the nurse claimed that there was a spirit in the doll and that the spirit identified itself as Annabelle. And so this became known as a cursed doll. And the Warrens had a kind of occult museum that they put a lot of stuff in, and Annabelle was one of the exhibits. Now, they've both passed on now, and the museum is closed, so I don't know where Annabelle is now, but that's where she was for a long time. And eventually they made a movie about it, which is why Fiona says, I'm talking about the real one, not the movie one. Well, so this cursed doll theme is something that's actually pretty new. It appears to have been popularized by, as with any paranormal report, you want to think, what are the natural explanations, and consider those first before you resort to a paranormal explanation. Now, I know it's claimed that Annabelle had a demon or another kind of spirit in it, but where's the evidence? I'm not aware of any good evidence that would suggest that this doll was actually infested with a demon or haunted by a ghost. Instead, this trope of having a haunted evil doll is something that appears to come from movies and television. Because you may remember back in the 80s, we had the Child's Play movies with Chucky, who was a serial killer evil doll. And there have been other evil doll figures in movies and television. In fact, it looks like Annabelle herself is based directly on an old episode of The Twilight Zone, which was a TV show in the 50s and 60s. And there's an episode of The Twilight Zone called Living Doll. And this is a famous one. If you've ever seen clips from The Twilight Zone, this is the Talky Tina episode. So there's a doll in the episode Living Doll named Talky Tina. And since it's The Twilight Zone, this is eerie and spooky and things like that. And the mother who buys the talking doll in this episode of Twilight Zone is named Annabelle. And that conjunction of the rare name Annabelle with the idea of a creepy, evil female doll strongly suggests that the real life Annabelle is based on some kind of warping of this Twilight Zone episode and is not really paranormal at all. And so I would say that I don't see any evidence for the real world Annabelle being infested by a demon or haunted by a ghost.
Gotcha. All right. That'll probably do it for this hour as far as weird questions for Jimmy Akin. But we got a whole bunch more weird questions about all kinds of stuff. Lots of stuff I never would have thought of. That's why I love these weird questions with Jimmy Akin. So hang around. We're going to continue that. Actually, I might have time to do another one. Jimmy, mm-hmm. do you feel like we got?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. Let's do Ryan. Ryan asks us, what exactly are the difference between exorcisms and deliverances? How accurate are the depictions in movies overall, and which movie or show is most accurate? Also, were any of the canonized saints ever possessed by a demon?
Okay, so taking the questions one at a time, both deliverance and exorcism involve freeing a person from demonic influence. And exorcism is basically a deliverance that's done with a formal rite. And in order to perform the rite, you have to be a priest and be properly qualified. So a deliverance is kind of an informal prayer-based exorcism that doesn't use the rite of exorcism, but they both involve freeing someone from demonic influence. In terms of depictions of exorcisms in movies and TV shows, I really can't say, because watching possession exorcism movies is not my thing. So I really couldn't say which are the most accurate. Have there been canonized saints possessed by demons? Well, Mary Magdalene.
Yeah, that's always the first one you think of, yeah.
Out of whom Jesus drove seven demons. Presumably, though, that was before she was a Christian. So have there been any that were longstanding Christians who got possessed? Well, I know there have been ample discussions of demons attacking religious people, like Saint Anthony of the Desert, the father of monasticism. Saint Ignatius of Loyola was reportedly choked by a demon, and there have been other reports, but I'm not specifically aware of one who was fully possessed. though I would have to do further research on that subject.
There are indeed lots and lots of saints, so that would take a long time. But thanks very much for the questions. More weird questions for Jimmy Akin on this Halloween episode coming up right after this. Just hang on. We'll be right back with lots and lots of weirdness, some cool music, maybe some ghosts, some more Dracula. I don't know, actually, but a lot of cool stuff coming up right after this.